Hey, thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Behind the Funny.
Make sure you're hitting that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the great episodes we have coming out.
And if you enjoy it, please tell a friend about us. Really helps the podcast out.
Yeah, we appreciate it very much.
And other than that, we hope you enjoy today's episode.
Be careful. He's Scott Higgins, both of them coked up out of their minds.
Listen to you. He's down in the basement. Yeah. Oh, I love that.
I think we should call this the Acement.
The Acement, yes.
Yeah, what do you think there, huh?
I like that. The Acement Studios.
Excuse me, I'm drinking beer. Hold
on a second. We usually drink bourbon on our end.
Yeah, right. Our podcast, so
that's all right.
Feel free to enjoy yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Shoot an eight ball if you want. We don't care. As long as it's good stories.
It's crazy. You're drinking chocolate milk and you got like all right, kerosene.
Let us get
look
to it.
It should have topped. Well, I mean, I don't know much about alcohol, but I do know when you get a little drink at the bar, they just put a little bit in the thing and take little sips. But look at you guys.
You obviously don't know how to start a podcast because we already started recording and you're going off.
Are we live?
Yes. No, we're not live.
Oh, I got Jesus. 5 months. Oh, Jesus.
Welcome to the Ace Minute. It's time to go behind the funny. I'm Scott Higgins.
And this is Ace Aceto. And we're drinking, and our guest is drinking chocolate milk, and he's the one that sounds drunk.
He's high on life, man. Goes,
you got any soda? No. You got any Crystal Light? No. How about chocolate milk?
No, it's not.
I got chocolate milk.
I jumped out of my skin with excitement. You see me? I said, know. Really? You no, do?
First, it started off with, got any root beer?
Yeah. Sarsaparilla?
Sarsaparilla.
Or as he said, sarsaparilla. Sarsaparilla. Something like that.
Who's making fun of me the way I talk?
No one. Who would make fun of you?
Oh, that's a Brad. Brad, this, you know Brad. You know Brad Pierce by any chance?
Yeah.
You have the voice of an angel, by the way.
Yeah. And Brad was, because he's been using that popular comedian is Nate Bargatze.
Oh, Bargatze.
Bargatze.
I can't even say it right after he says it. Nate Bargatze. Hilariously funny comic.
Hysterical.
Hilariously funny.
And just like we were talking before we went live and before you guys started drinking heavily, we were talking about matter of factly, Norm MacDonald, how he delivers a joke. It's really just talks. It's so delivery of just saying words, really. And
yes.
I mean, like, Nate,
you're
going to
throw in a couple of by gollies.
He has one joke that makes me, and he reminds me of like a Don Gavin type of guy who just say like, you know, I was just doing a show down in Puerto Rico. By the way, there's a lot of Puerto Ricans down there.
Right.
So that type of style. But Bargatze, I believe he has a joke where he says, my sister just bought a boat. My sister can't afford a boat. And it's just that type of stuff drives me nuts. I laugh so hard.
He is a wordsmith. He knows how to put the words together just right. Because I saw a clip of him today where he's like, my wife, she's the man of the house. He goes, she chose to cut the grass at our house. So I said, that's fine, but you need to go around to all the neighbors and tell them it was your choice. Before, they're going to me going, that's the asshole that makes his wife cut the grass.
Exactly.
Because he doesn't want to do it. And I'm like,
it's just genius.
Yeah. Just the way he weaves the story together is perfect.
It's more joke writing where, as a comedian, whenever you see a clip, first of all, it's very hard to watch comedy. I really don't follow too much comedy. So the only time I really see comedy is through from TikTok.
Do you purposely not watch specials on Netflix, stuff like that? Because Ace stays away from it because he's always afraid of that you might hear something later on.
I think when comics say that, I think they're full of shit. Because here's
no,
why.
No, no, that,
I'm
I don't,
sitting right
I,
here.
Because
I'm sitting right here.
No.
The fuck?
Because for years, they're... famously, Robin Williams was one of those guys that was blamed for, you know, repeating other people's material. And he even admitted that sometimes he heard something and he's on stage in the moment and he'd blurt something out and he'd be like, yeah, I think I heard that before.
Here's my take on that. Not a single joke, not a single topic has not been made a fun,
right,
been part of a joke or routine,
right,
somewhere.
Yeah. Right.
So if a certain joke is, let's just throw something out there, Viagra. Mm.
Yeah,
what's
but
your perspective on it? What's your just
exactly?
Somebody talked about it, you shouldn't. Well, be as not long
no, as but there's a difference between doing a subject that's been done before and doing a story from your perspective, your life, yeah, something that's true to you. Mm-hmm. That's the difference. Ace, I'm sorry.
I don't even know why I'm here. I haven't said a fucking word yet. We haven't done the
by the way,
date. You guys just went off and run into the races.
This week's whiskey date, if you will, is Irish, Scotch, American, Canadian, and Japanese whiskeys blended into one from Suntory World Whiskey.
And as I called courtesy it last week,
of my friend Ace Acheto.
I had it with our friend Derek Fonseca while you were in Vegas, and I called it the Japanese Italian whiskey because it's Suntory AO.
Not bad. You not
recommended
bad.
Seven size, yeah, quart. Sevens per bottle, two. Yeah. Ace is
no. No.
That's a lot in that glass. You gotta admit.
That's not. It's three fingers.
It's watered down.
It's three fingers.
It's watered down with the big cubes.
Yeah, we got two big cubes.
Speaking of Derek Fonseca, he just reached out to me the other day, and because he said a famous TikToker or whatever put out a meme, and this TikToker has millions of subscribers, and he put out a meme with Sandwich Police Car, and the meme said something about, like, imagine if, you know, there was a crime at, and it was basically sounded just like his joke, Sandwich Police.
Oh, really?
And which is, and he was like, oh, I can't do it.
No, he can't.
I said, wow. And because now,
that's the thing that sucks.
If someone more famous does something too close to you, you're done.
I'll tell you,
which is why I'm doing a joke
now. There's a meme out there right now. Yeah. That and a joke I was doing before memes were even created, like the internet, like didn't even take off. Facebook was just starting, and the joke is
Batmobile hot dog cart.
Not close. I keep trying to tell you, I made the comment about the Batmobile, but it's really hot rod dogs that
Hot rod dogs,
which
I'm
is going to happen.
Okay.
I will be wearing a Batman outfit when I'm wrecking it. So.
A kind cat.
Of same thing. Oh,
can you iron my cape?
And it's like I have a joke where I say, in all those years I thought my wife was a screamer.
Yeah, right. Turns out she was
just yawning.
Yawning.
So, and there's a meme that's out there now, and it shows it like it? You know, like a it's like a yawning, like, you know. I
a
didn't
woman
know
in bed yawning.
She was screaming.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was kind of similar.
Yeah.
But
yours is funnier.
That's like 10 years after the fact.
Yours is funnier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yours is funnier.
But then, you know, I've also heard some people say, some comedians say, fuck it. I'm still going to do my stuff.
Like well, I said, funny is funny.
And if it's from your, and like you said, if it's from your perspective and your life. This is a true story from my life. That's what I thought about it. I've put out a couple of memes on Facebook that, you know, I'm sure someone could easily turn into jokes and shit, but I put them out there first.
Yeah, but you've been doing the same act for 35 years, so, you know.
But my memes are new.
Salty loved them.
Yeah, trust me, no one's stealing Salty Brian.
Hey, and just like, and I like to say too, I said I'm actually lucky because all my jokes, they really don't fit anybody. Nobody could really steal my jokes.
And they're not even funny, so you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, no one's going to steal your jokes anyway.
Exactly.
Don't worry about it.
You're fine.
But so I'm actually lucky in that sense. But as you talk about the memes and the comics are following guys, I really don't watch if it's on Netflix unless it's like a Chappelle or
Really high up.
Yeah, And I did watch one recently, which was I thought was amazing. It was the first time I watched him, and it was on a trip with my daughter. My daughter, Kelsey's a huge comedy fan. Mm-hmm. I'm not even like her favorite top of 10 comic. Of course not.
None of us are our family's favorite comic.
It's amazing, huh?
True story. I did a benefit last Friday night for the music department at the high school in my town where my wife works.
Yeah.
Okay? She helped put this together. When we put the show together, she said, "Hey, see if Ace is available." She didn't ask if I was available.
She actually asked if he had to be there.
Yeah. Yes.
Exactly. And, do you have to be on the show?
And she goes, "Do you have anybody else that might be funny that could be on the show?"
She's trying to book everybody else. Like, she's got a whole list of
people.
Like,
if you want to grab another show that night, feel free.
It's funny because my daughter has seen Bill Burr multiple times. She's seen the guy with the no shirt,
Kreischer.
But one of her favorite comics is John Mulaney. Now, his last episode, which was genius, a couple things I like, and this might sound strange, I like the fact that he wears a suit on stage. I just think that's cool. But he talked that his last episode, it was all about his intervention. The whole thing was about an intervention. And he said some of the greatest comics on earth would put this intervention on for him. He showed up at, and he literally went into the bathroom to do some more drugs.
Really?
At his intervention. He said, "Hang on a second."
But wow.
Dude, when you watch this episode, the entire hour is about him going to rehab.
Wow.
And I'm telling you, one of the best joke writing I ever seen.
Yeah.
And it was hysterical because there was so many funny things in it. He was one of the things he worried about. He said, first of all, the funniest people on earth were in the Center for Intervention, and not one joke was.
They were at rock bottom at that point.
Yeah, then when he was at the, and then he talks about how heavy drugs he was doing.
Right, really?
Right. And, he said when he was in the rehab, he was concerned was that people would recognize him. But what happened was nobody recognized him. Yeah. So then he was trying to like the newspaper, like, "John Mulaney's in rehab." And he's like,
because he feels bad that he doesn't get it.
Yeah. It's just really, really, really good.
I love guys like that are doing something a little different than what everybody else does for stand-up.
Episode.
One of my all-time favorite stand-up specials I saw on Netflix, and I've talked about it with Ace dozen times. Neil Brennan, he used to write on Chappelle's Show, white guy. He did a special called Three Mics. He had three microphone stands on stage. He walked up to the first one and he did all one-liners. He walked to the second one and he told long-form comedy stories.
Wow.
Walked to the third one and it wasn't comedy. He told these deeply personal stories about growing up with a very emotionally abusive father. And then he'd walk back to the first one and tell one-liners.
Oh, my God.
And then tell the second one, do the comedy story. And he kept doing that. By the end, he pulled all three together. And it was so brilliant.
That's really good. It must have took him to
It was that. So brilliantly written the way that he did it and ended up pulling them
Where
all
can
together.
We get this?
It's on Netflix.
It's on Netflix. Yeah, it's really good. He won an award for it.
Yes,
right.
He won an award for it.
Did they call it a one man show, or did they call it a comedy episode?
It was considered comedy, but it was more of a one man show. His last one was more of a one man show too. He just put another one out where he had shelves behind him and they had blocks on him, and it was all about what he called. And he came out with a podcast now called Blocks, and it was things in his life that formed blocks to keep him from doing things emotionally, mentally, and stuff like that. And he'd go over the wall and he'd take the block off and he'd talk about it. And he would make it funny, but he would also talk about stuff that's deeply personal too. And then he'd put that block on and go to the next block and everything. He's so creative in what he does. It's so different that you couldn't copy that because it's so uniquely him.
Yeah.
And that I love when guys do stuff like that because of how creative it is. And that's the type of stuff I like to watch, you know, is when somebody is really doing something, they're putting themselves out there, because some people might watch that and go, "That's not funny. That's not this." But artistically, fantastic.
I'm definitely going to check it out.
You should. And I'm going to check out the Mulaney one too, because I love stuff like that.
I think you mean Mulaney. Not Mulvaney.
And I think it took place
Thank you.
I think it took place at the in Boston in the like one of those opera houses. It was a nice setting.
Yeah, yeah.
And I believe there was a kid in the audience. Like he was like only like 11 or something. So he noticed him like halfway through the audience. So he kind of kept going back and forth with them.
Oh yeah,
so it was pretty cool.
One of my favorite moments where a kid was in the audience was Mike Birbiglia. When he says to the kid, he goes, "How old are you?" And the kid goes, 11. And he goes, 11 years old. And are you with your parents? And the kid goes, "Yeah, they're right here." And he goes, "Okay, you're going to hear some things you tonight you probably shouldn't hear. And I just want you to know that I'm not a bad person. You just have really bad parents." And I just thought that was so funny, the way he did it.
The best kid response in audience came for me, other than the one me and you and Cal was on.
Oh, when you took the picture of me being shot
by
the kid.
Yeah, when a kid of Nerf gun. But the best one was Stephanie Peters. I booked Stephanie Peters at a show at Brood Awakenings, and it was sold out, packed house, and they had a nice little setup there. And you know Stephanie, she's not going to, like, you know, you can't say, "Hey, look, don't do this, don't do that."
Oh, no. No.
You hire Stephanie, you get Stephanie.
Right,
and
right.
That's what I wanted, because she was going to drive the place nuts. She's legit into her set maybe 20 minutes. So the place is going bonkers. Mm-hmm. There was a dude, like, a table right in front, and he was, like, basically friends of Dave Levesque and everything. Mm-hmm. And his kid was with him. And the kid was about 11.
Yeah.
Oh.
And she recognizes him for the first time at 20 minutes in. She goes, "What the fuck?"
"Who the fuck's with this kid?"
Wait, here's the line. She goes, "What the fuck? What the fuck is this?" She goes, "Please tell me you're a fucking midget." Dude, I almost died. I was laughing for a half hour. "Please tell me you're a fucking midget." Best line. Best line ever.
Oh, my God. Stephanie is hilarious.
And, like, think about it. How often would you have the opportunity? Now, normally, like, a off-the-cuff lines like that, people think, well, let's see a comic say, "Oh, he was so quick. Something happened." You know what? That probably happened 50 times.
Right.
And every night he went home after that and said, "I should have said that." And then it gets better and better and better. Better.
Right.
So how often do you think that would have happened?
Right.
Like, there's going to be a kid at a Stephanie Perry's, and she's going to say that. So it was really, really funny. Brought the house down, and then she didn't slow it out. She actually sped up.
Yeah.
She sped up. Everything was just a little...
That kid went. That kid went. Finished puberty that night.
Yeah, the kid's fucked up now. He's
smoking
counseling.
Cigarettes out back.
He's
on
drinking.
Back.
He's drinking scotch out of the bottle. He's got a podcast.
He's not using.
He's 12
he's
and a half.
A podcast he's, called. It happened.
I'm a fucking
Stephanie
midget.
Peter's show. No. That's the name of the podcast. Oh man. Oh, so nobody panics more than Brad Pierce at any type of show. Am I right?
Oh, we have talked about it before. We've said it. The thing with Brad is, all you have to do is say, "Brad, you can do anything you want.
But don't do this.
Say peanut butter." And then 10 minutes in, he's like, "All right, got to address the elephant in the room. I'm not supposed to talk about peanut butter, but I love it, and I got 5 minutes on it. So here we go. Buckle up." He can't help it.
I had him on a show. We had a show. My nephew runs Amos House, mm-hmm. and they have a sober show.
Yeah.
And it was at a convention center. Downtown Saturday night, and at the Omni, 400 recovering addicts.
Wow.
One rule: don't say sober. Sober means you're not drinking now.
Yeah.
Say clean.
Yeah.
Clean.
Yeah.
Don't say sober. This kid, I swear to God, he looked like he had a straight jacket on, trying not to say sober.
Right.
During so sad. And I've never done a clean show. Somebody saw him on the comedy bus, so they requested him. And so I had him go last because I said, just don't say sober.
Oh, my God.
He must have been
sweating,
stomach in knots.
Yes.
So he must have called everybody. He kept calling, referring them all to a cult.
He can't help himself.
You guys like it. Is this like a cult?
He can't help himself. He can't.
Yeah. And it was, but now people, here's the problem with the show. The problem with the show was it started at 10 o'clock. And I told my nephew, I said, that's really late.
Mm-hmm.
I said, especially if you've got events all day. It's a convention. All day they're doing all these things and then workshops and 10 o'clock. Said,
yeah, but they're
and
all
they're
on,
not drinking. And oh, wait, it gets
they're not
better.
Drinking, but they're drinking Dunkin' Donuts, smoking cigarettes and snorting coke.
They leave to have a cigarette and they come back.
Tell the story.
So most of those shows are intermissions.
Yeah.
They suck.
You're telling my exact story.
Yes, it's horrible because especially if you're a closer.
Yeah.
You're going up there for five people because 200 people outside smoking cigarettes. But now here's the thing. But it's I go up. I went up first. And I had a pretty good set. They were all pretty involved, right? There was probably 125 people there. And they bought tickets to go. It wasn't part of the thing. So I'm thinking they're going to stick around. As soon as I was done, a couple people got up and walked out. Bill went up. It was like people just walking. Brad's pacing the entire time.
No.
Oh, this is going to suck.
They're not
going to
safe. They're going to hate me.
Oh,
that's
this
is
going to
suck.
Sign.
They're going to hate me.
Yeah.
I said, yeah, they're going to hate you, but go up there. Have fun. Just don't stay sober.
Oh.
he goes up there, and they're continuing to leave.
Right.
So now this is like at the beginning of set. So what he does is he goes outside the conference room. He's got the wireless mic. He's doing a set from the hallway, yelling at the people for leaving.
Oh God!
Right where you get that's just a piece of the pie. It's the Omni downtown. You know
what he brings up pie.
All right, now the Omni. Wait. Ready for this?
Full circle of food.
What is the Omni connected to?
Cigar bar.
Is it connected to the convention center?
Oh, the convention center.
Oh, the civic, like the The Nate Bargatze show was getting out.
Oh, God.
And they were all walking past this giant sign that says comedy show here.
Oh, shit.
And it's Brad Pitt in the hallway doing comedy.
Doing comedy.
For people leaving, but he's losing track of the people leaving because there's hundreds of people coming from a way better show. A way better show. He was outside. He was in the hallway for 10 minutes. We were dying. The whole place was going nuts. And then like he was pissed off. And so me and Bill were high-fiving each other. This is awesome because he's pissed.
Yeah.
He's pissed. He's gonna have a good set.
He's gonna have a good set, right?
And, it was just hysterical the way it, and that's it. His type of style is unlike us. We're material comics, and he's a crowd work guy, and he goes up there and just does. I was actually mad when he was doing his material because I'm like, come on, just do the crowd work.
Yeah,
and then he hammered a lot of the people. One guy just gave him a He kept going back to him because he said he was an engineer, A-tier engineer. And so Brad called bullshit on him. He goes, you're full of shit. And then this guy comes walking in like three quarters to a set. And he's like, hey, I don't know if you know, but that guy over there
is an engineer.
The best. He's the best engineer in the world. And the place is going crazy. And this guy don't know what the hell happened for
right, 30 minutes.
So... Brad was really good, but he does the matter you get him. I think I'm gonna just stop like poking him or something.
Yeah.
Like, put cigarettes out on his
get a cattle prod and just shock him before he goes.
Just
shock
get him
before
mad.
He goes up.
Yeah, because that's the best. That's the best of the best when he gets mad.
Years ago, when I was still kind of hosting and opening, Stephanie Peters, started using me a lot, and she had me go, and I was opening for Mark Riley and her for the Half Moon Clean and Sober Foundation. So I go up, I open, I bring up Mark, and then after that they have an intermission so everyone can go outside and smoke. And I'm like, all right, Stephanie, when they come back in, I'm bringing you up. She goes, no, you got to do more time. I'm like, I don't have any more time. And she goes, I don't care. I'm not walking out there cold. You got
to
do some more time. So I just do a few minutes, bring her up. It goes great. She calls me a week later. She goes, hey, they loved you. We got another show at this barn complex. You and I, they want us. I'm like, yeah, great. So I go there. Now I'm feeling a little cocky because they like me. So I go on stage. Everyone in the audience has a cigarette in one hand and a Dunkin' Donuts cup in the other. Everybody. So I go on stage and I look around and I said, wow, everybody here has a Dunkin' Donuts and a cigarette. I'm so glad you guys are over your addictions.
Oh.
Crickets. Crickets. Nothing.
That's just like the sober.
You might as well
the
say sober. Yeah.
Nothing.
Like, yeah.
So I then slowly worked into it, and I was okay by the end of it. And then Stephanie gets up. We're in, it's called the Powder Mill Barn. It's an actual barn converted into like a reception hall. And she gets up, and all she does is go, it's fucking freezing in here. What do you guys live in, a barn? They died laughing.
Right.
They died laughing. Then the third gig we did for them was the famous one I've told on here several times. They did all weekend long at this Boy Scout camp in New Hampshire.
Ooh.
They want us going on at midnight Saturday night.
After a whole week of counseling and...
Yeah. Oh, but 11 to midnight before we went on, Peter Tork from the Monkees.
Oh.
But he couldn't say the Monkees legally. Because he didn't own the rights or anything like that. So even when he sang the songs like Last Train to Clarksville, he goes, that was from a little group I used to be in and everything like that.
That's awesome.
But he was a dick to us.
Oh.
Absolute dick. So when she got...
Was that the ugly monkey? There was like an ugly monkey, right? And then the other monkeys were kind of cute. There was one ugly monkey, but he was like...
But they introduced me. I go up and I'm doing my thing. And he is picking up his shit off the stage behind me. Disrupting my act.
Oh.
So Stephanie is in the back of the room just seething while this is going on. So she gets up and she goes, how about a hand for my opening act? The crowd starts clapping and she goes, Peter Tork from the Monkees, ladies and gentlemen, huh? Is he a fucking asshole or what? And she goes off on him for 10 minutes. She does not give a shit.
No, Stephanie doesn't care.
And I think that's probably like when you, like probably something that you should have if you want to be a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
So you have to have that type of, like, don't care attitude, because it takes a lot of balls to get up there.
She was also the first one to tell me that when I was featuring, she goes, if someone calls you and says, hey, can you headline, can you do 45 minutes? Even if you don't think you can, say yes. Go do it. Push yourself. Put yourself in that position, because you'll be surprised that you can find a way to do it. She goes, and if you get to a certain point, once you're featuring, someone calls you to host, say no. Don't be afraid to say no, because if they think they can still get you for that lesser spot, they're going to keep paying you and keeping you in that spot.
You know,
what you're worth and hold that line and don't be afraid to say no.
Yeah.
You know, and now it's weird because it's the same person is involved. Ace's show, Ace booked me and her for Royal Flush at Newport, and that show sold out every time. There was 200 plus people. Amazing show. The only downside, and Ace will tell you, the only bad thing about that show was not that it was free, right? It was a free show.
It was a free show.
But the
in a
stage
casino.
Was really far. Yeah. There was energy, level, distance. But and because it was the Royal Flush and then we had the setup, I was following Stephanie. Now, if you're going back, how long ago was that?
Because the King.
So I was and it didn't hit me until she was on stage.
Crushing.
I'm like, oh, shit. I got to follow Stephanie Pierce.
Yeah.
And then I remember calling my wife after the show and I said, look, I had a really good set and I had to follow Stephanie Pierce, and which is really hard to do.
But
back then it was even now it's just like,
oh yeah,
you know, cause she's going to destroy that place.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's just, I mean,
listen,
we're
we did
all
a
confident
show.
In our sets, but there's some people that make that, the night's over.
Come
you know
on.
What I mean? The night's over. But
would you want to follow like Kevin Knox back in the day?
No.
You know, Don Gavin when he goes on stage? No, of course not. Yes, you're confident that you can go up and do a funny 45 minutes, but there's just certain people that can just light a room on fire.
And so it was like it didn't hit me, and then I just kind of psyched myself out, and somebody told me a long time ago, and you hear it a lot in the comedy, be confident in yourself. Listen, hey, don't worry about everything.
That's it.
Do you stick to what you do? Don't try to be anybody different.
Yep.
And you'll be fine.
Did you ever do that early on, either one of you, where you're waiting to go on and someone in front of you crushes and you're scrambling in your mind how to change something or try to make it better?
I did that,
or try to
do it. It was the worst thing ever.
Yes.
And
it
I was
never
told,
works.
Mike Hanley, I did one of the first shows I ever did. one of the first fundraisers I ever did. Before it was even Funny for Funds, I had him on the show with me. And I was so panicked because it was an older crowd.
Yes.
And it was one of those staple shows where you had to follow the speech of everybody's crying. You know, and now you're ready for some comedy. And I went up. And it was one of the, I was totally
now
rattled.
Now for some levity.
Totally rattled. Didn't do any swear words. And didn't do, and it kept it completely clean. And mind you, I only had 15 minutes tops.
Right. Yeah.
And now I was really dialing it back. And Mike Hanley goes on after me, and there was a particular table right in front that was stuffy, 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 a bunch of old people. And then, so as soon as Mike gets on stage, he jumps off the stage, literally climbs on a chair, and gets on the table of these old people, and he's giving them all the finger.
Yeah.
And then he just went into his whole set, brought the house down, and I'm sitting there on the sidelines going, why did I rail?
Right.
And then he goes, he gets off and he goes, don't ever change your stuff.
Yep. Yep.
If they don't, if somebody doesn't like your stuff, they shouldn't be at the comedy show.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're going to write enough, you're going to write good enough to be on the comedy show.
Right.
Don't worry about that one or two people, because now the whole crowd suffers and the whole crowd's not going to see your stuff.
Correct.
Because you were so
They hired you for you.
Exactly.
And you know what? That's also happened sometimes. And we've talked about it with us. We've talked about it with Linda Belt one time.
Yes.
Is when you're getting it, like it's bad to get heckled regardless. It's bad enough when the heckler yelling stuff out. The worst ones are the ones who are heckling under their breath, and you're the only one that hears them. You can hear them heckling.
Well, Mike never
hears one
them.
Else. I know. I was thinking of that as I was saying it. No one else in the audience. He took his ears out.
His ears off.
No one else in the audience can hear them. So it rattles you. Now you go after them. The rest of the audience is like, what an asshole. Why is he picking on that guy in the front?
Yep.
They have no idea that guy in the front's been busting your balls for 20 minutes.
How crazy is this? Two stories in a row, and I connected the same story to the same person, giving the same tip. I just gave you the story about Stephanie Pierce. You talk about Linda Belt. Me and Linda Belt, I was doing a show. This is early on again, and she was closing. I was featuring Full House. I'm up there. And the table right next to me was real loud. They weren't really talking to me. They were just loud. They were talking among themselves. It was bothering the hell out of me. So I addressed it, and I was trying to say something funny about it, and it fell flat completely.
Yeah.
Soon as I was done, you know, I got through my set, and Linda goes up, and she has a great set, as always. And then afterwards, I said, during my set, that table right to the right wouldn't stop talking. She said, they talked through my whole set too. And that's when it hit me. I said, oh, because I was in the back.
Nobody knew.
The whole audience didn't know that people they were talking. That's why the jokes fell flat when I was I said, he said, unless everybody's turning around, looking at the other tables, it's not bothering the show. Just keep going. She said, and so it was one of the best tips I ever got. I said, so when you do, if you talk about somebody in the front, I said, first of all, if you got like five, six empty seats in front. But if you're in the back of the room, you can't see them.
You don't even know.
Don't mention those five empty seats.
Right.
Nobody can see them.
Or the other thing is, if you have a heckler that the crowd knows they said something but doesn't know what they said, repeat what they said to the crowd before you say something.
Right.
Yeah. And Paul Nardizzi told me that early on when I was working with him, because someone in the audience said something to me. The whole crowd knows somebody just said something to me but does not know what they said, and I fired something back and it got nothing. And afterwards,
they didn't hear it, so
he said to me, he goes, you know, no one knows what that person said to you. He goes, so take a minute and say back to the crowd.
Now, that gives you time to think of the joke.
Right. He goes, say, did you just say, and repeat what he said, and then say your comeback. He goes, one, even if the crowd heard it, you repeating it accents it and gives it you a bigger punch.
Makes perfect sense.
And I was like, wow, that's so simple, but yet. so brilliant.
Paul's one of my favorite comics. I call him a tag master.
He's one of the best writers ever.
100%. He's adorable because he's just starting to get into social media. I don't know if you noticed it.
Yeah. He's doing jokes from his kitchen.
Yeah. And he's doing it. I want to bust his balls. I want to just make a comment.
Yeah, but you do once, he'll probably never do social media again.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
But he has one of the greatest stories, road trip stories ever. And I think I talked about it to you guys before about it. He had a gig in Canada.
Yes.
And he had asked Teddy Bergeron to take a ride with him.
Yeah.
And Teddy Bergeron approaching the Canada border, United States Canada border. And that's when Teddy goes, "Oh shit, hey, I don't have any ID on me." What? So Teddy dropped Teddy off.
Yes.
They kept him in a jail cell at the border for 2 days.
Yes.
2 days. Because it was overnight.
Yes.
He had to pick him up on the way back.
That's crazy.
Great story. If you're, he's one of the, a lot of people that don't know Paul, if they ever meet him, they're like, they say, "Oh, he's really standoff." No. You really got to know
him. You got to know him.
If he likes you.
Oh, my God. He came on the podcast. We had him on, a year or two ago? When he ever found out my real name.
I think he found out through me.
I think he did. He goes, "Hey, I was talking to Mike Murray the other day. Your real name is Richard?" Now every time he sees me, Hey, Rich. How's it going, Rich? And he's got this smile on his face, like he found out some big secret. Like I don't have it on my birth certificate,
We had such a great conversation with him, and I'm sitting there and I'm like, my first paid weekend at a comedy club, I said, was at the Connection in Providence back in the day when we worked Wednesday to Sunday, and it was with him as the headliner.
Wow.
And I told him, I said, "You gave me this great piece of advice." And before I could tell him what it is, he goes, "I did?"
Yeah.
I'm like,
"You got the wrong dude."
I don't even think I said a word to you.
He goes, "What the hell did I say?" And he just, every time I work with him, he's got his notebook out. He's constantly writing. He's just
a really, really, and that's what, we talk about. I don't watch the comedy specials unless it's really something I want to watch, but And as you know, we work most weekends, so it's really hard to go out to see live comedy. But so when you are on a show, that's when the classroom happens.
Yeah. Right.
So one of my favorite experiences for early on was I was opening up for
Ace of Cedar.
That was one of my first ones. That was the Comedy Connection. Yeah. And that was when I realized that. Oh, that wasn't spontaneous what he did.
Oh, yeah, right.
And we talked about that before. But Paul D'Angelo supposedly has 10 hours of material.
Oh, he is one of the most prolific people ever.
And so what happened was I was doing a show, Bob Montgomery booked it, and it was over 300 people in the audience. It was packed. And I never seen him before. So whenever, I sit right down here. And I tell all young comics, too. I say, "You sit and watch."
Yeah.
I said, it doesn't have to be about watching the comic just to laugh or it. Watch and just try to see how they're holding the microphone. See what they do. How they react to certain things. And just watch how the mannerisms. But then I like to play a game and try to see how they got to the punchline.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like you don't even see it, and that's when you know they're really good. As a comedian, if you can't see that punchline coming, you really and so Paul D'Angelo was on there on the show, and I heard so much about him, and I want to be a student of comedy. That's what sat right in front. I'm sitting there and watching him, had a really good set, His opening joke, his opener. 3 applause breaks.
Yeah.
I almost quit comedy that day.
Yeah.
That day I almost quit comedy. I'm like, there's no way. Is this what comedy is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. First time I saw him, I'm like, I can never, ever be that funny.
And it was like, yeah. And you see some comics do that. And Don Gavin, another one. Don Gavin, I was lucky enough to meet Don Gavin my very first time doing comedy at the Catch a Rising Star.
He was
the headline for the graduation show.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which was amazing.
Wow.
So, and he was which was really cool, though. John Parada had a show recently where he had John Pizzi as a host, Steve Sweeney, Lenny Clark, and Don Gavin.
Yeah. Yeah, he had the Mount Rushmore.
I was like the only comic in the seats.
Yeah.
I'm like, why isn't every comic that has the night off, and it was a Sunday, mind you, not here?
That's the Mount Rushmore of Boston comedy right there.
So Don Gavin closed the show out, and without a shadow of a doubt, nobody knows who Don Gavin is.
Right.
And everybody should.
Right. 100%.
Everybody should.
They call him the godfather of comedy in Boston.
Of Boston for comedy. A reason.
So,
right.
Yeah. So his opening joke was absolutely genius. And did I ever tell you this joke? This is awesome. He goes, and hit the best part, he sits on a stool the whole set.
Yep, he sits down.
Complete control
so
of the audience.
Totally
Lenny
comfortable.
Clark screaming on the top of his lungs.
Yes.
Bouncing around. Steve Sweeney, I think, is one of the funniest guys on earth.
Yep.
He had the greatest intro. Johnny Pizzi is introducing him. And as he's introducing him, he's saying, oh, you saw this guy on, like, you know, something about Mary.
Me, myself, and Irene, and this and that.
But while the intro was happening, he's walking towards the stage going, that's right. That's right. He's talking about me. He's talking about me. That's right. That's all true. And all the way up to stage, I'm like, so genius.
Right.
But Don Gavin says this joke. He goes, guys, he says, I'm a bad driver. Matter of fact, I'm the fourth worst driver in all of Boston. Fourth worst driver. My last accident, though, wasn't my fault. Was not my fault. I did not see the guy. Did not see him. He was in his living room.
He is the king of misdirection.
It wasn't my fault. I never saw him. He was in his living room.
I worked with Paul D'Angelo one time, and I don't remember. It was a long joke, but it was in the height of all of the, you know, the computer viruses and everybody breaking into computers and stuff like that. And he talked about, you know, everyone's saying, oh, protect your computer, protect your computer. And he goes, why? Is some guy from China going to break into my computer and steal all my jokes? Is there some Chinese Paul D'Angelo over there? And he starts doing his jokes
in Chinese.
As a Chinese guy.
Yeah.
And he did 5 minutes of the Chinese jokes. Paul D'Angelo doing his jokes. And I am crying in the back of the room.
And that's comedy writing 101. It's like, all right, you ready to, oh, what's funny about it? What's sad about it? Let's flip this script.
Because
and
some guy hacked his computer.
He went to China.
Yeah. Some guy hacked his computer, stole his jokes, and basically he redid jokes he had already told
he'd
that
already
night.
Done.
But as the Chinese Paul D'Angelo, and got a second standing ovation.
Right. Unbelievable.
Yeah. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's like my grandson. He's 4 years old. The kid's nuts. You know, we're always talking. If we could just be in his brain.
Right, yeah.
For just a few minutes to see what he's thinking. And it's the same thing. We want to be in the brain of these comics. How are they getting this stuff?
The one and only time I worked with Don Gavin, he walks out on stage and his opening act that night, he goes, I like to start off with doing an impression. This is my impression of an Eskimo pissing. And he puts his hand in front of his groin, and he just drops ice cubes.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
He just drops ice cubes, and he goes, anyway. Well, and he just starts into his act from there. It's a stupid little thing that it gets an immediate, quick little laugh. Like Tony V. We talk about his opener all the time.
He was awesome.
Yeah, but what I was going to say was even Bob Nelson, when we talked to Bob Nelson about how he was at the aquarium with his niece and nephews and watching fish go around and eat food. And he was like, that's funny. Like, I want to do that. Like, make that face. And that's when he came up with the idea of blowing bubbles and going, look, it's fish eating.
That's it.
That's it.
And then he'd
blow a ton
of them, and he goes, I'm freaking out. There's too much food in my tank.
Yeah.
And it's just a stupid, silly thing.
He did 5 minutes. I was lucky to work with him. He was at, I never
last
worked
summer,
with him, but he was
right?
at the he was at the Clean Comedy Competition, and he was one of the judges, and he did two sets, actually. So I actually got to see two sets.
Yeah.
And he did 15 minutes on his hair. And I was like, I'd be scared to death.
Right? Yeah. And he's been losing his hair forever.
In all different directions.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because now it's all long and crazy. And it was like, yeah.
And then the next night he did another set, and he probably did 10 minutes on with a plunger. And he kept putting the plunger on his head.
On his head.
In all different angles. Yes. Yeah. Just yes. And
I'm a unicorn.
Yeah. It was just
genius. Nuts. It's silly. It's stuff that you did when you were a little kid.
As an adult,
the mirror. But now, as an adult, it's even funnier.
And he had an interesting story, and he's sick right now. And, you know,
yeah.
I think he's getting better.
He's gotten a lot better. He's talked to him.
Yeah, he's gotten a lot better.
And he's just, I would definitely like to book a show, like a special event in Rhode Island. I think, see, because Rhode Island, and we talk about this a lot, like, what's the word? I know about you as nostalgic.
Nostalgic. Yeah, yeah.
Rhode Island is like, I think we're a very nostalgic. Unique state for that.
Yes. Yeah.
And so I think he would be, like Dice Clay, if you put Dice Clay in Chicago, it's probably not going to work. Put him in Rhode Island, he'll probably sell out an auditorium.
Absolutely, yeah.
Same thing with Bob Nelson. He'll come out. Like, same thing we talk about Periwinkles. The older people, they'll come in for Periwinkles. So Bob Nelson, I would love to have him come in to do a private thing, and he was really cool. But the cool, I don't know if you know this, he might have talked to you, had him on the show here.
Yeah. Yep.
Did he talk about how he became a clean comic?
Yep.
Yeah.
And how he was like hanging around with Dangerfield. Like, they would be like, Dangerfield would calling up and say, hey, let's go do some coke. And he'd be
did he tell you about when he was...
He got blacklisted, basically.
When he was part of a group called the Identical Triplets?
No.
Oh, yeah. It was him...
Him.
Rob Bartlett from used to be on the Imus show. We've had Rob on too, and Eddie Murphy. Identical triplets.
And they all look like
And one of their bits they did an imitation of an eclipse.
No way.
Yes. Where Eddie would pass in front of another one.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Yeah.
I had an Eddie Murphy trivia question in my trivia the other night. Yeah. What was his last name in Trading Places?
Reggie
Hammond.
No.
It was.
What was it?
Trading Places.
Oh, Reggie Hammond was...
No.
Beverly Hills Cop.
It was 48
hours. 48 hours.
Hold on. Oh, shit. Lewis? No.
No, Lewis was
looking
the other one.
Looking good, Lewis.
Yes.
Feeling good.
Because I said the other name.
Valentine.
Yes. Billy Ray Valentine.
Billy Ray Valentine.
Once you say Valentine, you know Billy Ray Valentine. So that I would have died. I would have died if I saw that.
Well, and then they go, we realize that, you know, one of us doesn't look like the others. And then Rob Bartlett would step forward instead of Eddie.
And raise his hand, not Eddie.
The other white guy would raise his hand.
Oh, my God.
Hand.
So it was like, what do they call it? Ensemble. Ensemble. I'm learning new words tonight, people.
Because they all came out.
I know the words. I know what they mean, but I just don't know how to say them.
They all came out of the same club in Long Island. All these guys around the same time.
He's a tall dude. I never knew he was that tall.
Bob, yeah.
Bob's a tall dude.
Yeah. I just forgot what I was going to say.
Do you know his character that he does, Epi Epperman?
Which is that the boxer, the football player?
No. He's a younger like kid who's kind of stupid, and he has glasses,
talks like this.
Yeah, he's got tape on the center of his glasses. I'm Epi Epperman from Cleveland. Well, when Ace is introducing him on the podcast, he goes, I don't know whether to introduce him as Jiffy Jeff the boxer, Bob Nelson, maybe Epi Epperman. And then when he brings him on, he goes, hi guys, I didn't know I was going to be here tonight. It made my year.
God, we were dying.
And he was just, you know, he told some great stories. And when he got to his cancer, he was an open book, man. He really told some great stories. And he just was a sweetheart of a guy.
He faced him with that, but years before that, and he talked at length at the convention where he talked about how he became a clean comic and how he lost a lot.
Well, when I opened up for him, I wasn't supposed to. And we told him the story. I went to see him, and I'm sitting in the audience. It was at the Connection in Providence. And
you were booked with him, but you...
No, I wasn't booked with him. I was just there to go see him.
Okay.
My wife and I and two friends of ours that were big fans of his. Debbie, who was booking the Connection at the time, comes up to me. She goes, hey, can you host tonight? And I'm like, well, yeah. She goes, yeah, he was supposed to bring an opening act, and he has a circus clown as his opening act. And the guy barely speaks any English. And And he even talked about the circus clown that he used to bring with him a lot. The guy would juggle and do all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, yeah, of course I can. And she goes, all right, come with me. As we're walking in the back, she stops me. She goes, listen, he's very religious now and everything. You have to be squeaky clean. I said, all right. I said, how much time am I doing? She goes, like 3-4 minutes up front. That's it. I'm like, I can be clean for 3-4 minutes.
Don't
that's
tell
fine.
Me you
she goes, you have to be squeaky clean. No, I said, that's fine. I got this. She brings me in the back. She introduced me to him. He couldn't be nicer. I went out. Yeah. I was fine.
Oh,
I,
good, good.
I could do 3-4 minutes squeaky clean. I bring up the clown who did his thing and brought Bob out. And at the end, he was a sweetheart of
just
a guy
a great
to me.
Guy.
Yeah,
and he was really nice.
He's one of the good ones.
And when we had him on, he was nice to us. You know, and we didn't get a chance to mention it yet, but you know, the comedy world lost a legend this week too. Richard Lewis passed away.
I was watching TikTok today about Larry David was talking about how you know that show that they were all
Curb
there
Your
talking.
Enthusiasm. No,
well, yeah, the Curb, but there was a they do that tour where they just all answering questions on the stage. And so it was a TikTok with that, and Larry David was talking about the friendship of with him and
Richard Lewis.
They grew up together.
Oh yeah.
They actually went to a camp. They met together at 12 years old at a camp.
At a Hebrew camp.
And then they
camp.
Didn't see each other until they were doing comedy together. And he said, and Richard Lewis is like, I know you from somewhere. And then they figured it out. And they said, you're always arguing on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's their real life.
Right.
They do that in real life too, that back and forth arguing. But Richard Lewis, the guy was awesome. I loved him on Crip too.
The guy rose to stardom. He had, you know, did some sitcom work. Kind of faded away for a while as comedy seemed to change. Still kind of went out and did his, you know, corporate stuff and other stuff like that, but wasn't on TV as much anymore. And then Curb kind of
totally
brought him back into the national spotlight again,
Curb,
which was great.
And Super Dave Osborne was another one of those people. And
Bob Einstein. And you know who his brother is?
No.
Who? Albert Brooks.
Is he really?
Yes. Super Dave Osborne's brother is Albert Brooks, also on Curb.
Yeah.
And they, every now and then there'll be at Albert Brooks' house for like lunch or something.
Yes.
Oh, and then what's the other guy who created Blazing Saddles?
Oh, Mel Brooks.
Yes. No relation, right?
No relation.
Albert Brooks was funny.
Really funny. And Super Dave was hilarious.
Oh, bye.
He was great.
I just loved his voice.
Yes.
And he tells the jokes.
What the hell are you doing?
Oh, when he tells jokes.
When he
on
tells
Curb.
Jokes.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's not good at telling jokes.
It's just everything about Curb.
So how cool is it, though, that this is the last season of Curb? Like Larry David said, it's done. So at least, like, you don't have to go through losing another character, like when Bob Einstein passed away, you know. And it almost seems like Vince Vaughn took that spot on Curb.
Yes.
As the, you know.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, he's showing up, you know, but I thought it was really cool that I just started watching the new season. I watched the first two episodes, and I'm like, and I had noticed that he looked sick, and I actually Googled it one day. Yeah. I was like, what's going on with Richard Lewis? And I guess he had like major back pain and surgery.
Four operations in like
and
2 years.
And that's why
he retired from
like
comedy.
That.
He said, on a TikTok where he would say, hey, I figured I'd come out and say this. I saw this today.
Yeah.
I figured I'd come out and say this because a lot of people are saying, hey, what's going on? And he says, you know, 4 years ago, 50 years in comedy, I decided, you know, I'm going to call it quits and just, you know, do my thing and retire, enjoy life. And then, boom, like 6 months later, I needed a new hip. And then my back was, I had four major surgeries. And then he was like, his feet were shuffling. Then
he got diagnosed with Parkinson's.
And
so sad.
And it was very evident when you watch Crib. It's like
he slowed down.
Whoa.
Yeah.
And, but I used to love his style of the whole like
God,
wearing all the black.
I went to my doctor's the other day. He says I'm dying. I don't know.
And he's like constantly like, you know,
And
what's the other comic's name? He does that complaining all the time. He yells and
Mike
swings.
Murray?
Brad Pierce?
Definitely Brad Pierce.
He's an older comic, too, and he does that type of stuff. And
Well, Gary Shandling used to have a very similar way of doing funny. It, yeah. too.
I'll think of it.
Probably. Gary Shandling, one of my favorite jokes by him.
The Gary Shandling show was hysterical.
That was great. But he had a joke one time I saw in one of his HBO specials. He goes, I took out this girl recently, and I, you know, we get back to her place, and I'm on the couch, and, you know, things are really going well, and it's getting really hot, and we're getting into things, and all of a sudden, you know, she comes back in the room and ruins the whole thing. Yeah.
We saw speaking of Larry David, I saw a TikTok come. I sound like a 12-year-old.
I mean, you've been talking about TikTok nonstop. And you referencing your act about
yes. Yeah. And then TikToking.
What the hell is all this TikTok for? That's my Larry David.
But it was Larry David was on a set and
you're almost Ed Burns like with that.
Yeah, I guess if I talk more like Ed Burns.
Little Ed Burns.
Yeah, but Larry David, he's you know.
You got to be a little bit more
I've been doing Norm too much. Senator there. Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, Conan O'Brien, when he first met Larry David, he was talking about that.
Yeah.
He says, when I first met Larry David, we were on a set, and he said what the set was or whatever. And I went up to him and I said, hey, you know, and Larry was eating a sandwich. He was just like chomping down at it like a monster, like food in his mouth. And he goes, I'm Conan O'Brien. He says, never saw your show. I can't tell you if you're funny. I don't know. I never seen you before. And it was
He's the king of uncomfortableness.
Yeah, and it was like, was his first interaction with Larry David. And it was really Larry. It's George.
That's what makes Curb work so well is how uncomfortable
he
creates situations. Right.
The whole thing is it's not scripted. It's all they got bullet points.
They need to go from A to B. Right.
Right.
But I know we've talked about this before too, but he just said it that Larry David was George on Seinfeld.
Right.
And that's why it's so funny because he's been being asked lately in interviews. And so it's all over TikTok where he's talking about how the time that George quits his job and then shows back up.
He did it on SNL.
He goes, I'm walking. I get halfway home and I realize how much money I gave up. And my buddy Kramer, my neighbor Kramer, goes, just go back on Monday.
Well, like nothing happened.
Like nothing happened.
And then he's sitting there and he goes, yeah, I'm working on this. And then they just went on and like he was back in the game.
Well, right. When we did the episode of season 10 of Saturday Night Live on here, Brian Mulhern brought that up.
Yeah.
Because it was that
now
season
he's been talking about
that Larry
it.
David walked out
so
and came
funny.
Back.
Yeah, because it was the year that Lorne Michaels left and Brandon Tartikoff was the one that...
It was that same season.
Yeah.
And Larry David was one of the writers.
And Larry David, what did he say? He was writing for like 2 years. They never used
anything. Never used anything.
Anything.
Everything that would get cut.
He was like, fuck this shit. Yeah. I'm done.
This show
stinks.
He walks out. Yeah.
But imagine, even though they use nothing, you're still getting paid every week.
Amazing.
Right.
You're still getting paid.
And see, that's what I think a lot of people don't realize. If they're outside the comedy game, they're like a layperson. And like you see, we talk about the shows like the Oscars or Emmys, and we got the host as a comedian. They don't understand that there's... Like and whatchamacallit got a lot of heat there.
Joe
but he
Boyd.
Had 10 days to get ready.
Yeah.
But they don't understand there's 40 writers that wrote that monologue for
but,
him. So,
but my only argument, not to interrupt you, which I tend to do a lot.
No.
My only thing I'll say about Joe Coy, I agree with you absolutely. He didn't have enough time to really go through and rewrite it. But when he said on stage... He blamed the writers. I didn't write that one. And when the crowd laughed, he goes, I wrote that one. That he should not have done.
That was cheesy. I totally agree.
he should have taken credit, good or bad. He should have stood behind his writers. You don't throw those people under the bus.
Right.
That was a shitty thing 100%. To do. And I'm a huge Joe Coy fan.
Yeah.
Huge Joe Coy fan.
And,
but I lost respect when he did that.
Of course. And
are you a huge Joe Coy fan?
Dude, I introduced my daughters to Joe Coy. I have always liked his stuff, but man,
who's the local guy that opened up with a lot?
Orlando Baxter.
That's right. He opened up for him for
another
a couple of years.
Yeah,
but man, you don't do that. You don't
100%. They're not supposed to know that there was a writer's for this stuff. And so like I was saying, and then when I would talk to a layperson, I would say, you know, and they get all the credit. I said, when you see a Tonight Show, Johnny Costa, it's so many ways. Do you have any sense? Well, it's like 50 writers have to write 100 jokes mm-hmm. a day on the topical situation. They may never use your stuff.
But have you ever seen any of them blame the writers
never.
For anything?
That's where you cross the line. Oh, totally agree. Totally agree.
He just got nervous because his jokes weren't going over, and it was the wrong thing to do to blame the right. writers, but it was probably in desperation,
and
really.
Some of those jokes were, as we say, punching down. He took the low shot to try to get a laugh, you know, which whatever.
Yeah, it
was 100%. When he blamed the writers. Say,
but we talk about, like, so Larry Dave, 2 years, they never used this stuff. So right. you had all these, and Brian had written stuff. I'm sure they probably used minuscule stuff.
Right.
But the saddest story when we talk about writers and opportunities. So you got our friend Brian who had an opportunity. You got yep. all these guys that Larry David had an opportunity writing for Saturday Night Live, which they never used any of his shit. But Brendan Kirby, a local friend
yes.
of ours,
yep.
Who's awesome. I don't know if he ever told you this story, but he moved to California a while back
to intern.
Try to make it. Like, you know, yeah. And he's a very monologue style. He had his yes. own little late night show on Public
Wicked
Access,
late.
Which was hysterical.
I was on.
It was awesome,
I was
wasn't
on
it?
Wicked
he had
late.
The rim
yeah.
shot guy. It was absolutely hysterical. I thought very, very funny writer. And I want him to do stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
I said, dude, you can, what's that? That comic, he's starting to blow up now. He looks Chinese. He's half Chinese. Something Bryn. He does like a, he wears like a suit, like a suit on the tie. Sometimes done undone, like a bow tie. Stephen Byrne.
I don't know him.
Steve Byrne is not new.
Not new, but he's
been around for a while.
But he's starting to gain with social media and the TikTok and everything because he does a lot of crowd work too. But Kirby is just that type of comic. So he was in California, and he was going to the comedy clubs and
you
everything.
You know who Steve Byrne is.
And what happened was, how are we doing on time?
Yeah, no, I'm
no. He's looking up Steve Byrne.
Yeah. He's awesome.
Yeah,
I love his style. Anyways, so. Yeah. I call it monologue style, if that's a name. I don't know what they call that style. So he, Kirby was doing a club, or was at a club, and he was walking outside after night. It was like midnight, and Jay Leno comes out.
Yep.
Now, he's a huge fan, of course, the Tonight Show and everything. He goes up to Jay Leno and he says, hey, I'm a huge fan. I'm from Rhode Island. He said right away he jumped on the Rhode Island thing because he knew he was, because Jay Leno was from Boston, right?
Yeah.
Right.
He says, I'm from Rhode Island.
Steve Byrne's from Rhode Island?
Is he?
No. Who?
Leno.
Kirby.
Jay Leno.
I'm sorry.
Kirby, yeah.
Stop
Stay
reading your
program.
Phone.
Yeah. Yeah. He's TikToking over here. He's checking his Instagram. Anyways, so.
I got a new
follower.
He says,
hey, I got, and Kirby actually had his notebook with him, which was full of monologue jokes. And he says, it would mean the world to me if you take a look at this. Now, at the time, Leno was still
on the Tonight Show.
And he gives him the notebook, thinks nothing of it. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning. The phone rings.
Mm-hmm.
It's Jay. And he thought, you know, like anybody else, like it's one of his friends, you know, busting his balls. He says, love your stuff. He says, why don't you come in the office Monday, mm-hmm. see Cheryl or whatever, and tell her you're there, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, that's it. I made it.
My ticket. I punched my ticket. Yeah.
Monday morning, all over the news, Jay Leno announces his retirement.
Yeah,
that's how close he was.
Wow.
And
timing is everything.
Timing is everything. And I love Brendan. We have I was on that show. You've been on that, like the road show.
Oh yeah.
And me and Brad Pierce, I don't know if you noticed, we have a little challenge on the down low where if we're ever doing a live interview or we're
you gotta mention something. What is it?
We gotta mention potato salad.
Potato salad.
So potato.
I think Brad told us about this.
You gotta work potato salad into it somehow, but it has to be like something live, a news thing or whatever.
Yeah,
and
I was eating potato salad. Yeah.
So Brad. So the funny thing is that Brad was doing they were doing a news special on the Comedy Bus, and Brad. They were going to interview Brad. So Mike and Jet.
And his wife.
Yeah, they're over here watching the interview. And they 2 days of taping to try to get one segment.
Yeah.
So as soon as this one segment was done in the first day, Mike's wife goes, "Brad, what the fuck's up with the potato salad?" Must have mentioned potato salad like 10 times.
You know what? The next show we book Brad on, we're going to go, "Brad, you can say anything but potato salad."
That's the trigger word. You guys just start arguing about potato, like tell stories about potato salad. See if he catches on.
On the podcast.
Yeah.
On the podcast.
Just mention potato salad a bunch of times. The audience will probably love it too.
Yeah.
So the second day he's doing potato salad again a bunch of times. He calls me up and goes, "So we have like, it doesn't matter how many times you say it, it's 1 point
as long as it's if you do it."
They edited every potato salad out of it. Not one potato salad. 20 potato salads, not one made it into the segment.
I lost.
I was pissed. Fast forward that Friday. You're on the Roadie Roundup. And one of the questions was, there was a documentary out, so it was a popular documentary. If there was going to be a documentary about you, who would play your part? And I said, who would play Mike Murray would be Liam Neeson, but he would have to gain some weight to play the part.
So he'd have to eat a lot of potato salad.
And the whole documentary won't be about my life. It will be surrounding the controversy of potato salad.
The audience was
probably like, "Tell us more." That was the end of the segment.
I'm pretty sure the audience wasn't asking for more.
I sent the clip to Brad. He was like, "He must have been so pissed." Right? Then I was on the road show a couple weeks ago, and the question was, with Joe Coy was on.
Golden Globes.
So what do you feel? What's your thoughts about comedians and doing that was a good question the night before. And I said, "You know what? I really, really don't like these award shows. It's just movie stars patting each other on the back." Well, you know what they should have? They have a show and give awards to like regular people, like regular Joes, you know? I said, for like Auntie Susan's world famous potato salad, which is for my set, and then it got in.
He must be so pissed.
World's best potato salad goes to Auntie Susan.
He must be so pissed.
Dude, I'm up
2-0.
You're
up 2 points.
I'm up 2-0.
And he filmed for 2 days and didn't get anything. You filmed two separate segments and got twice.
Ask him.
Because he overdid it.
10 to 20 times he said potato salad.
He overdid it. That's why.
He overdid it.
You got to slide it in.
Yeah.
That's what she
said. One before I forget. So Brad Pitt.
He's like the skipper from Gilligan's Island when he gets a
Gilligan little buddy,
Santorelli.
Thank you for getting that. I had to do the hands like this.
Who's Gilligan?
No, you remember
Gilligan?
You remember Gilligan's Island?
Who plays Gilligan? You,
Bob Denver? No.
No, when Santorelli does the impression.
Does his impression of the skipper.
Gilligan, little buddy.
He's like, "Gilligan, little buddy."
I don't know what you're looking for.
That's perfect.
No, so Brad Pierce has this like I showed up at a show. He was doing and he didn't know I was coming. And I just showed up as like a fan to watch the show. And I knew he was going to have a lot of people there that liked him and everything. But I went online and I bought a shirt. Did you ever see the shirt that has Brad Pierce all over it?
Oh, yeah.
With the bananas and everything. It's a Hawaiian shirt with Brad's face all over it. And I wear it to like any outing that
his family's
I wear it to a show. Oh, yeah. It's a huge hit. And plus it hides my curves. Anyways.
Nothing hides your curves. Who are you kidding?
Anywho.
It's like the pajamas that my sister-in-law has.
Looks like a Brad Pierce blimp.
I retired the shirt, I'm saying. That's one. I retired the shirt.
In other words,
but
it doesn't fit anymore.
Not true. But I retired it.
That's the name of the episode. Mike Murray, this shirt doesn't fit anymore.
I retired it in the best possible way. I dropped it off at a thrift store.
Oh, my God. Are you kidding? Wait a minute. You want to hear the scary part?
It is now on sale at the Coventry Thrift Store.
No, it's not.
Of course, for $4.
No, it's not. It's someone bought it.
Someone bought it?
No. I guarantee you someone bought it.
No, somebody already sent them a picture saying I'm going through the thrift.
Listen, my kids, that's all my 20 and 19-year-old do is go to thrift stores. I will fucking die laughing if my son Mike comes home and goes, look what I found, a Brad Pierce shirt.
Dude, that would be...
That would be hilarious.
You'd have to post that picture.
It triggered me to...
I'm going there tomorrow to see if it's
still
there.
How cool would that be to make up a bunch of shirts of somebody that we know
and just throw them at thrift stores.
Some at Savers, some at the Salvation Army, some at the... How funny would that be?
That is
So I said
it's kind of like all the kids in Africa that are wearing 49ers Super Bowl championship shirts.
So Brad Pierce got a text from a girl saying my favorite comedian's shirt is on sale for $4 at Northern Thrift.
Coventry. Oh my God.
I got to go there tomorrow and see if it's still there.
I'm going tomorrow.
Go
fuck
tomorrow.
You.
Please go.
This is the name of the episode. Mike Murray, Potato Salad and Thrift Stores.
There you go.
Dude, I think it's a great idea.
Can you get potato salad at a thrift store?
At a thrift store, yeah.
And that's what.
Oh, fucking studio's falling apart.
Turn your TVs off. Look.
Oh my God!
Is that crazy?
That is. But
as soon as I said, I gotta
making
do it.
Shirts up with somebody's face and stuff on it, and putting them in thrift stores,
or maybe even make them in
Salvation Army stores,
like in
or something.
A serious note, like just
that's hilarious.
See.
That is brilliant.
Yep.
That is brilliant.
All of a sudden, you're driving through center of New England in Coventry, and you see someone like panhandling at the end with a fucking Brad shirt on. No,
instead of like the Trump stores, you got Brad Pierce stores going up everywhere.
A pop up,
yeah, a pop up store.
It's just like I got such a kick out of it, and then when I was too anxious, so it was like I was there the next day to see if it was in, because you drop them off on the loading dock.
Yeah,
the next day I'm like. And this shirt's gonna stand out. It's a Hawaiian shirt, because my kids will thrift all the time, and it's the things that stand out. That's what they buy.
Yeah, yeah.
And my daughter actually hooked me up with that thrift store. She said, "You gotta go." And I bought a whole ski outfit. I went to New Hampshire the other day, boots, pants, jacket. That jacket had an interior liner that comes out.
He had a Bill Simmons jacket.
$38, some whole setup.
Mary Ellen DiPietro boots. Mike Cronin helmet.
Oh, man.
And John Parada skis.
I did a roast. Mike Cronin, I was on a roast. It was for Mary Ellen. And Mike was in the audience. He wasn't part of the roast, but I went after him anyways. I said, Mike Cronin is here tonight, everybody. Mike Cronin, because a lot of people knew him. I said, Mike Cronin, for years he was considered, they called him the bad boy of comedy. The bad boy of comedy. You know, I said, but then he found God. Then he found God. And so if you've seen the set, I said, let me try and say if I said it right. He found God. And now his entire audience all says that this all wonders while he's doing his set, please God, make this stop. It's reflected in his set. That's it. And it's reflected in his, he's found God, and it's reflected in his set. Because the whole audience is thinking the same thing at the same time. Please God, make this stop.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. So
and, all right, we haven't asked since it's been a while.
Yeah, I was going to say we should.
Have you had any funny bad gigs lately? We always tell people when we're explaining to other guests about the funny bad gig, we always talk about how to you a bad gig is there was a buffet table and they didn't even feed the comics.
That was a bad gig. That was a bad gig.
A good gig is when it's right on side of New York System Wieners.
Oh. it wasn't my gig, if that, if it's going to count. It's
you can do that.
Yeah.
We've had other people tell other people.
So, because I know covered a bunch of bad ones with you, like, you know, the cow story and mm-hmm. a whole bunch of others. But there was one gig that I got hired to hire somebody. I wasn't ready to do enough time. Mm-hmm. And it was like a carnival type thing. And there was like a carnival type thing. There was going to be a festival. There was all boots and everything. And then, you know, it's one of those ones that they have like music and then stuff like that. And just picnic tables all over here.
Yeah.
And when I first got started, I was really good friends with Nick Albanese. And Nick mm-hmm. Albanese, you know, he probably had about 15, 20 minutes, which was 18 more minutes than I had. Yeah. So I said, hey, I got this gig for you. Cool thing is, there's going to be a lot of people there. Bad thing, snow pay.
Yeah.
So we get there. It's in the summer. And so you got all these boots over here and the stage is over here. And like nobody. There's like 1,000 people over here shopping and the crafting and all that. And there was like picnic tables forever. And I was among 3 people. In the whole audience that was like listening to him.
Mm-hmm.
But the only thing you could hear, you couldn't hear, like, and nobody was laughing,
mm-hmm.
but I was crying, laughing so hard at watching him die on stage.
Of course. This is the reason why Nick sweating. Albanese gave up comedy.
It was sweat. To this day, he keeps bringing it up. It was like the worst gig ever for him.
That probably is the reason why he has written 15 movie scripts since. He's like, I'll never go back to comedy.
Hasn't touched comedy since. You know, and Nick, he found his lane. You know what I mean? He found his lane. That's his lane, acting and stuff like that. Yeah. And Derek Moore has found that lane also recently. Yeah. He's not doing comedy anymore.
No.
And he's focusing on... He's a great actor. I don't know if you've ever seen him do anything
gotta be good
other than yelling and screaming. But I call him an angry midget. But he wrote a book recently.
That's the second time you mentioned midgets.
Yeah. What do you got against midgets?
Not much, but I used to have a midget joke, and I
know.
And now I talked about this full circle in this episode of Behind the Funny. And I talked about that show when I first started, and Mike Hanley was on it. I used to have a midget joke, and it was horrible because when you first start, how many horrible jokes did you have? And you go back, I can't believe I
90% of them are horrible.
Yeah, it was like what? And people still hired me. What was I thinking? The joke is horrible.
How did I get any work? Yeah.
So it was It was a joke. I'll tell you the joke. You probably heard it. Maybe you heard it. It was in the very early, I just started. I said, there's nothing cool for deaf people. Yeah, nothing cool for deaf people. Blind people, they got dogs. Dogs are awesome. You know, paraplegics, they got like help. They got like helping monkeys, which that's cool. There's nothing for the deaf, though. You know what would be cool for the deaf? Hearing midgets. Hearing midgets. But they're short. You gotta, that would be really cool. Like a mini me, you know? I dress him up like myself. So you wear your hearing midget on your shoulders, like a backpack. He's on your shoulders. And he can't do sign language because his fingers are stubby. So when he thinks you need to hear something, he just slaps you in the head and you gotta try to figure it out. It's like, oh shit, somebody's at the door. Oh shit, somebody's on the phone. No. Oh shit, my Pop Tarts are ready. Thank you, hearing midget. That was my hearing. That was a horrible joke. So that joke, that show with Mike Hanley, which I was dying, I did that joke. Ready for this? You're not going to believe this. It's going to sound crazy. A table all the way in the back got up and left. They were all midgets. All midgets. Right out the door.
Okay, now
I never saw them.
Wait, let me.
They were sitting down. I couldn't tell.
All right, here's full circle. Here's full circle.
That was the last day I did the hearing midget joke.
Yeah,
did you ever hear it live? No,
no.
It was so early in my.
Here's full circle. Before we went live for the audience, we were watching Norm Macdonald videos of him on talk shows, and we said the funniest thing was when he was telling these horrendous jokes. The look on the host's face, whether it was Dennis Miller or Conan O'Brien or something. And I just felt that feeling as he was telling that joke. My head was in my hand. I was like, I can't believe he's saying this, but it's funny.
You can't do a hand image joke anymore.
What, is someone on the phone? Oh, shit. My Pop-Tarts are...
And then I would go like this. Thank you, Heaven Midget. That was the punchline. Thank you, Heaven Midget.
That's like a K-Tel commercial from the 80s.
Yeah, right?
It was a horrible joke.
All right. On that note,
can you imagine that was like 14 years ago. Imagine trying to do something like that now.
No, you'd be canceled.
I can't believe you told it tonight. That's a horrible.
We lost your whole midget population on that. All your subscribers.
They can't reach the keyboard.
Oh, I didn't go that far, guys.
They only count for half, anyways.
Oh, my God.
Oh, hey. All right. Well. It's an hour and 20 minutes.
So I guess that would be
in.
Considered a bad show when a table full of a family of midgets get up and leave.
It's only half bad.
Did they all get in one little clown
car?
We could
go all night.
Oh, absolutely. You didn't hear me.
Did they all get up and go in one little clown car to leave?
Yeah. They had one of those little Barbie cars.
Yeah. All right. On that note, before we get canceled, because that's all we need. Hey, folks.
It was a fun
Mike,
podcast while it
thank
lasted.
You for coming on.
Thank you, Mike.
Yes.
Great.
This is
great.
This is the season ending and actually,
series ending.
Series ending
it's been
fucking
a good
show.
We
it's
did.
Been a good
we
run.
Had fun.
It's been
we
a
had good fun.
We had you on one of the first ones. You're on the last one.
Check the credits. Well, it'll be my... Oh Auntie Susan's world famous potato salad recipe.
Yes.
Oh my God. All right.
Mike was on the first episode I ever recorded and the last
and
episode
the last
I'll
episode.
Ever record.
Well, that was full.
I'll buy this table off you for first, my podcast.
Forget it. This is the name of the pod of the episode.
Potato
Mike
salad.
Murray, full circle.
Yes, there you go.
All right, folks. Thanks a lot. We hope you enjoyed this show. We will talk to you soon.
Take care.
Bye bye.
Thank you so much for joining us this week. We hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you really want to help out the podcast, one great way to do that is to go wherever you download your episode and give us that 5-star written review.
Yeah, that really helps us with the analytics and the algorithms. Helps more people find us. And speaking of more people finding us, tell a friend about us. If you enjoy the show and you've got friends that enjoy comedy podcasts or podcasts in general, please let them know about Behind the Funny.
Of course, we will talk to you
next week.